Six Figure Developer Podcast. I am John Calloway.
And I'm Clayton Hunt.
And today we have CEO and Chief Instructor at Code Career Academy, Jeff Ammons.
Hi there.
Jeff began web development in 1994, when the web was young and has had an interest in programming since middle school. Welcome, Jeff.
Hey, how are you guys tonight?
Good.
Doing good.
So, Jeff, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got started and how you got interested in programming?
Certainly. It all goes back to when I was in middle school, would have been seventh grade. We didn't have computers in our school yet, but there were computers over at the high school. And I had a really great teacher, Patricia Byrne, who set up a mentorship program for various different areas. And I picked programming. And so I got to go in the afternoons across the street to the high school and work with the instructor there who taught programming, and she paired us up each with one of her students. I got to sit with my tutor for about 20 minutes before he got called down to the office, and I never saw him again. Being the shy young guy that I was at the time, I didn't say anything, so I took the textbook, read the textbook, went home, didn't have a computer at home in those days, wrote my code out on notebook paper, brought it back to school the next day, got to walk across the street after school and key it in and see if it worked. Those were in the TRS-80 days, when a computer looked like a computer from Star Trek. It looked like a terminal. It looked like what you expect when you think of a computer in those days. And it was extraordinarily powerful. It had, you know, several kilobytes of memory and a cassette tape to store your data on. That was a lot of fun. From there, I rolled forwards. My first computer I got myself was a Commodore VIC-20, which had 8 kilobytes of RAM. Rolled through the Commodore line, Commodore VIC-20, Commodore 64, then a Commodore 128, which could run CPM, which was really amazing at that point. From there, I rolled in college. I rolled into Macintoshes. Worked on Apple Macs for quite a while until I graduated college and needed to purchase my own. And at the point I needed to purchase my own, Windows 3.0 sounded pretty good price-wise compared to what the Apples were running in those days. And so rock and rolled forwards from there, went through various programming languages. Like I said, started with BASIC back in the day, did some Visual Basic. In the early days of the web, you did your server-side in Perl, which was a real pleasure, especially when JavaScript came out. And now you would have Perl code with embedded HTML code with embedded JavaScript all inside of this massive mess of strings that you had to keep track of. That was particularly fun. Rolled forwards from there, went through some C++, spent a fair number of years doing Java, and then switched over to .NET in about 2005, and have been in the .NET world ever since.
I know that you're also a Pluralsight author and a Microsoft MVP. Do you want to tell us a little bit about those?
Sure. I have been a huge fan of Pluralsight for many, many years, and they've been a supporter of various events and the user group I run. So back in something like 2014, I wrote a blog post saying that, you know, Pluralsight was my secret weapon. That was how I stayed up to date on what was new and what was interesting. And about 2015, I got the idea I would like to maybe do a course for them, but I didn't think that I was ready. So I was going to do a series on YouTube. And they approached me at some point, asked if I would be interested in doing a course for them. And so I went through the audition process, assuming I would be bounced out as an amateur noob in the world of video courses, and managed to make it through. And I did a course. The first course I did was how to build a better blog with a static website generator. Did that one first, then I rolled into the second course that I did for them was around Visual Studio Code, about how to get started building your first extension to Visual Studio Code. Because I'm pretty excited about the code editor. It kind of hits a sweet spot for me of being lightweight with a fair percentage of the features I'm looking for and extensible in the languages I care about. The main languages I care about these days are JavaScript and C#. I love C#, but it's not as, you know, ubiquitous as JavaScript. And so the text editor that they came out with lets you work with TypeScript or JavaScript when you write your extensions, and I thought that was really cool. I had been working with Atom before Code came out, which is the one from GitHub, and you could do JavaScript there as well, but they tended to favor CoffeeScript, and I'm just not a fan of CoffeeScript. Nothing wrong with it. I know there are plenty of people who love it. It's just, it never appealed to me. If I'm going to write JavaScript, I want to write JavaScript. As far as the MVP program, I got into the MVP program last July for the first time. I was really honored to be selected. Didn't really go out of my way to try to pursue it. It's just that, you know, I've been doing tons of stuff in the user group community for years, and lots of speaking, lots of writing, blogging, talking about stuff. And so I think one of our local evangelists nominated me. So I was really, really happy to be accepted into the program. And then I got to hang out with you a little bit at the summit back in November. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah. So let's talk about user groups and meetups.
Sure.
Clayton and I have started a user group, a .NET user group in St. Petersburg, Florida. And we're about a year and a half in now and growing pretty well and always seem to have some interesting topics. What's been your experience for user groups, for the community, and what is the secret to running a successful user group?
I've got two groups that I run right now. The new one is the one that's associated with my school, and we do meetups here geared towards beginner topics. I've got coming up next week an intro to C# hands-on workshop that I'm doing, which will be a follow-up to my bigger meetup group, which is called GGMUG, the Gwinnett, Georgia Microsoft user group, which I've been running that one since 2008. And we meet at Gwinnett Technical College. They've been awesome hosts, and we've had some really good sponsors. Magenic has been our food host or sponsor since day one. So I have to give them a bit of a shout out there.
Did you say you've been running that since 2008?
That's correct. We formed it in 2007 and had our first meetings in spring of 2008. And we've been meeting every month since then. I think we had 1 month when there was a massive ice storm that we canceled the meeting. And that's the only time we've ever canceled the meeting.
It's impressive.
Thank you. It's been a lot of fun. We've had tons of good speakers and topics over the years. And we're really fortunate in the Atlanta area that we've got a vibrant community of speakers and user group members. I've been lucky. A lot of folks, Jim Woolley was someone specifically, he was our Ineta mentor when we first started. And he was, without him, we couldn't have gotten started. He's a longtime MVP. You know, lots and lots of folks have helped us out over the years. One of those things as far as what helps to keep one going, Ineta in the day, which was the international .NET user group, which unfortunately disbanded last year. But one of the things that they did when we first signed up with them was they sent me a book on how to manage a user group, which had invaluable advice. And one of the key things that they said was user groups that last are the ones that get their own members to become speakers. And so one of the things that I do is at least twice a year, I have what I call a short session evening where we have two or three speakers who speak from 15 to 20 minutes, 15 to 30 minutes, kind of in that range. And that way we get multiple topics. And we get people who are in the group who get to try their hand at speaking. We've had a number of folks who started that way and have gone on to be speakers at lots of different places.
I've seen that done at a number of meetups. We've seen them called Lightning Talks. And,
Lightning Talks.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. We were, we've been doing those for a long time. We early on, we tried a lot of different things. We've settled now into really two main formats. We do the short session or Lightning Talk about twice a year. Other than that, we do the standard user group meeting where we have a speaker come in and present on a given topic for a long period. The thing I like about the short sessions or the Lightning Talks is I tell people you don't have to be an expert. This is not about bringing in an expert. This is sharing something you're interested in. It could be a project you're working on. It could be a framework you want to investigate. And you get a number of benefits for doing it. The first benefit you get is you will never research a topic more thoroughly than if you commit to speak on it. If you have something you've been meaning to learn and you want to learn it, commit to speak on it and you will learn it. The second thing is, you know, you will essentially introduce yourself to everybody at once. In my classes, I teach my students that one of the keys to progressing, becoming a developer and progressing as a developer is managing your career as if it were a brand. And one of the keys is just networking, networking, networking. And the best way I know to do that is go to meetups. Meetups and user groups as much as you can, as consistently as you can. The big mistake I see people make is, you know, they go to a user group and announce that they're looking for a job, and that's the only time you ever see them. Well, in that case, nobody cares. Nobody is going to care that you're looking for a job. What you need to do is go consistently for 6 months and do it not because you're looking for a job, but because you are interested in this topic and you want to make friends. There's no substitute for human connections, and it has to be genuine. It can't be, oh, I'm going to do it for this period of time and I'm going to get people to like me, then I'll get a job and I'll never go back. It has to be genuine. You go and just hang out with people, get to know them, let them know what you care about, let them know what you're passionate about. And then after you've been a member of that community for a while, when you announce that you are looking for a job, people will care. And if they don't have a job, maybe they know someone who does. But the short session gives you the opportunity in that vein to stand up in front of the entire group at once and say, here I am. This is who I am. This is what I'm passionate about. And you just got, everyone got to know you at once, as opposed to you having to individually over the course of the months introduce yourself to lots and lots of people.
I have two questions. The first one is, what advice do you give to people who are part of your meetup and they want to talk, but they're really, really nervous about talking?
If you take the short session approach, that's my number one piece of advice, is since it's going to be a 15-minute talk, you know, there are people who find they really, really enjoy doing public speaking, and there are people who find they would rather be set on fire. And so I don't know which kind of person you're going to turn out to be, and probably you don't either until you try it. So if you have committed to do a 15-minute talk, and 5 minutes in, you decide you'd rather be on fire, you've only got 10 minutes left. So pick a bite-sized chunk to start with, because if you don't enjoy a 15-minute talk, you certainly won't enjoy an hour and a half talk. But if you do enjoy the 15-minute talk, odds are very good that you're going to enjoy doing a longer talk at a later date.
All right, awesome.
That's my number one thing. The other piece of advice I would say to anybody in general, and I cannot remember where I read this, but physiologically, if you look inside your body at the processes that are going on when you're nervous, those are the exact same physiological reactions that you get when you're excited. So in a lot of ways, one of the things you can try to do is change the way you're thinking about the reactions you're feeling in your body. Instead of thinking, I'm really scared and nervous about speaking to this group tonight, you think instead, man, I'm really excited about speaking to this group tonight. And it really does help.
I will have to try that the next time I have to speak. Okay, so the second thing is, have there been any topics that just really stood out to you? And if so, what about those topics stood out? Was it the actual topic or something about the presentation?
Both. We've had so many speakers over the years and so many topics. And a good speaker can make you enjoy a mediocre topic much more so than a mediocre speaker can make you enjoy a great topic. We've had, like I said, we've been very fortunate because we've got a lot of really enthusiastic people who are very passionate and very smart in this area who I know personally, who I can bring in. You know, I speak at their groups, they speak at my group, and we kind of mix it up that way. But over the years, we've had so many good speakers. Sean Wildermuth is a particularly good speaker in our area. He does things internationally as well. He's one of the really top Pluralsight authors. If you go check out, he's usually in the top 10 with one of his courses. He's got an ASP.NET Core class that's been in the top 10, I think, for at least a year now. One of the ones that he did that just was fun for me personally was last fall. He did a talk about developing for HoloLens, and my son got to be the guinea pig. So he got to be the guy wearing the HoloLens, and we could see up on the screen projected what my son was seeing, and Sean was coding in Unity to show us how to build stuff. That one was so much fun because he put a sphere up in the air, and so my son can walk around, look at the sphere from all the angles. Then he put in a bit of code so that it would put a wrapper around it. It was just like a bitmap wrapper around the sphere to turn it into a globe. And then he put some code in so that when my son looked at it, the globe would start to slowly turn. Then he flicked the switch and the thing just falls out of the sky and just goes through the floor and falls forever. And that was not so, that was okay. That was kind of cool. But what blew my mind that I didn't know about the HoloLens was when he flicked it into the mode where it started mapping its environment. I didn't realize that it did that. And so you could see as my son looked around, it looked like crystals forming on everything, like ice, just ice crystals forming little triangles on the floors, on the tables, on the walls. And so now he had it where when my son tapped on the globe, it fell. And this time it hit the table, rolled across the table, fell on the floor, rolled across the floor until it got to the edge of the area it had mapped, and then it fell off into infinity. And that blew my mind. That was the moment that I said, okay, now that is really, really cool.
John, take note. We need to get Sean Wildermuth to do that presentation.
You need to get Sean to do any presentation. He is just, I've learned a lot from him just watching his talks about how to do a presentation and how to teach, because he is an absolute natural teacher. And one of the things that the first time I ever saw him speak, I realized was that he is super good at engaging with the audience and making sure people are getting what he's talking about. And so he'll stop every so often, just ask people if things are making sense, and he gauges the room, and then he knows if he needs to reiterate something or go deeper on a topic.
Yeah, I really enjoy Sean Wildermuth. I think I saw him at the Louisville.net meetup, and I think I saw him at the Dev Space Conf last year. I've been reaching out to him to see if he would be so kind as to be a guest on our podcast. So, Sean, if you're listening, come on anytime. We'd love to have you.
He's an awesome speaker. Like I said, Jim Woolley is always great. He does some really deep dives on topics like the Roslyn compiler. Some of his talks on that have been extremely fun to listen to and really just geek out to the, you know, what's going on behind the scenes at the deepest levels. Another guy here who's really good is Sergey Barsky. He's spoken for us a bunch of times. He was, at the time, he was with Magenic, and he was our first pizza delivery sponsor. So for many years, until he left Magenic, he was the guy who brought the pizza and spoke to us very frequently. And also a really, really sharp guy. We've got several of the Wintellect folks who come and do talks for us. Keith Rome is really good. Keith, I did a video with him at the MVP Summit, an interview with Advice for Beginners, which is up on the my Code Career Academy website under the videos tab. We've got a link to the, I'm trying to build up a YouTube series that has a combination of technical tips and career advice. And that was the kind of the first thing that we did was the interview with him, and he gave us some really good advice for beginners trying to find their first job.
Switching topics just a little bit. Earlier, you were talking about JavaScript and mm-hmm. Playing around with Visual Studio Code. What JavaScript frameworks and libraries have you been getting into lately? And why have they been interesting you?
Yep. For me, I am really a vanilla JavaScript fan. I like writing JavaScript myself to do things as much as I can. And the fact that I've been teaching, you know, I teach beginner classes, so I don't really dive as deep into some of the frameworks. I think Angular is really cool. I'd like to spend some more time with React. But one of the things I tell my students is don't go there until you are proficient with vanilla JavaScript. So, you know, when we start out the classes, I make sure that people start with nothing but Visual Studio Code. You know, you're not going to work with any frameworks at all. You're going to work in vanilla JavaScript. And early on, we get to the point where eventually I let them pick up jQuery just from the standpoint of because it makes doing the AJAX calls so much easier. That's really the only thing we use it for is just smoothing that little process out. But we start making REST calls, pulling back lists of data, and building up the UI from code without even having anything on the server yet. So the first project that I have them go through is a web page only where there's HTML, CSS, and vanilla JavaScript, with, like I said, with that one little bit of jQuery in there so that they can bring back and manipulate data. And we had some really cool projects this past time that people built. We had one fella who, we actually had two people who queried the iTunes API, one for music and one for movies. And so they came up with similar end results for movies versus music. But in both cases, you could start out with a text box to put in the name of the song or the movie you're interested in, then do a first query to pull back a list of related stuff, then fill in a div with a set of links and pull back things like the movie posters and all this kind of stuff so that it was styled and looked really cool. You could see the thumbnails of all of the movies. Click on the one you wanted, then it would make a second fetch and pull back into a third panel on the screen there the actual details for that movie, including a link so that you could go buy it if you wanted to. And that was without a web server at all. You know, this was strictly running. I let them run, there's a little HTTP server, which is literally called HTTP server, written in Node, that's about the lightest weight thing you could possibly get. You can just fire it up from the command line in a directory, and then it serves up any files that are in that directory. And so that's kind of the approach we take. We eventually get into TypeScript later on, but I don't let them do any of that until I feel like that they've gotten a really good handle on the vanilla JavaScript. Because what I've seen in the industry is you have some people who learn the frameworks, they're really excited about the frameworks, but they don't learn the fundamental language underneath. And it's like, you know, it's go back a few years and it was, you had folks who said, oh, I don't do JavaScript, but I do jQuery. And you're like, okay, well, you know that's JavaScript. No, it's jQuery. No, it's JavaScript. It's a lot. So the thing I try to avoid with my students is them going down that path of learning a framework first. You know, once you really have a good handle on the fundamental language, then it's great to pick up those frameworks. But, you know, I like to make sure they dig in first. Our cohorts are 6 months long, so it's a long chunk before I get to play with something new. Because right now I am teaching day classes and night classes. So my days tend to run from 8 a.m. till 10 p.m.
It sounds like you're giving your students a solid foundation on which to build their career as they grow and learn.
That's my goal. That's my goal. You know, the boot camp space, I don't like the name boot camp, but I'm kind of stuck with it because that's how people identify coding schools. If you look at, there's a lot of different boot camps out there, and they're all over the map for quality. There are some I think are great and some I think are terrible. My goal is to be one of the ones that are good. And I want to make sure I give a solid solid foundation to my students so that when they come out and they start looking for a job, they're really in a good place to do so. And I've got some of them have started interviewing now. And one of my students, Leon, went to a coding challenge and was kind of nervous about it. And when he saw that the question they were asking, he was like, well, I can do this. This is easy. It was a JavaScript thing. And the first thing they said was no frameworks, no libraries, no jQuery. And he was like, no problem.
I fully agree with knowing the basics first. I've been doing interviews for several years, and I couldn't even tell you how many candidates that I've interviewed that can't write a for loop in their chosen language without IntelliSense.
Wow. I have a philosophy towards teaching, and I'll, if you'll indulge me, give you my analogies here. I believe in teaching programming the way I would teach someone woodworking. You know, on day one, I would not, set out to teach them the history of hammers and the theory of saws and, the classification of wood and the biology of trees that explains why the wood is the way it is, and then eventually have them try to build something. My philosophy is take the opposite approach. Give them a hammer and a handsaw and a piece of pine and let them build the world's worst birdhouse. You build the world's worst birdhouse, and then I have the ability to talk to you. You're ready to listen when I start telling you, okay, remember how hard it was to saw that line, a straight line. Now, this is what we call a table saw, and this is how you don't cut your fingers off with a table saw. And now you are prepped and ready to want to know how to cut a straight line. And so I take the same approach with coding. So day one, I start people, I start with the assumption that you've never written a line of code. And so we start with JavaScript, and we sit down and we go through variables. We do hello world, of course, first. And then I just kind of build it up. I say, okay, now that everyone has written this, and JavaScript is the perfect language for hello world because it's literally one line. You have a file with one line in it and that's it. So it's very accessible to a new person. We build up from there. Okay, well now, what if you wanted to say hello 10 times? Okay, we copy and we paste, console, down the line we go. And so now I say, okay, now what if instead of hello world, you want to say hello Lawrenceville, which is where the town we're in. And so how do you do that? And so now I introduce the concept of a variable. Let's replace the word world with a variable. And now we set the variable at the top of the page. And now we go, okay, this is great, but now what if we wanted to say this 100 times? And so at that point, we learn how to write a for loop. So on day one, I teach them how to write a for loop, and we don't have a lot of IntelliSense yet. So
there you go, Clayton. Then maybe we can get some of the candidates coming out of Code Career Academy.
I would love that.
I will put in a plug for my folks. They are graduating at the end of May, and they will be ready to go. They have learned, like I said, HTML, CSS, and vanilla JavaScript. Once we have gone through the process of building responsive and mobile-first CSS and HTML, then I let them pick up Bootstrap. One of my happy moments was when we picked up Bootstrap for the first time, and now we're seeing it do its responsive thing. And one of my students said, hey, this is just using media queries. I'm like, boom. Because you learned what media queries were first, now you know what it's doing. And it's not a mystery if it breaks. You have a chance of solving it. But from there, we roll forwards through front end. We do a lot of REST calls. We do a lot of Bootstrap, like I said. We get to the point that, like the project I described a moment ago. Then we roll into back end with the Microsoft stack. One of the things that was really pleasing to me also was when we rolled into C#, one of the guys, after about 3 weeks in C#, he said, I don't recall us really studying C#, but I'm writing C#. The way that I do that is when I teach JavaScript, there are a lot of ways that you can work with JavaScript. And what I try to do is start gently with the pieces that are going to be similar to what they see in C#, because for loops are going to look remarkably similar. Mm-hmm. And variables are going to look remarkably similar. Conditionals are remarkably similar. Objects, if we use the JavaScript prototypes and constructors, if we use the constructor and do a new, use new to generate up our objects, that's not the only way, or in a lot of people's opinion, the best way to create your objects, but it's very similar to what we see in C sharp, so that now you understand it. And then the fun part for me was lambdas in C sharp were pretty easy to teach because we'd been passing functions in JavaScript. And so I was able to take a lambda in C sharp and just expand it out and make it look exactly like a function being passed in JavaScript. And so they were able to catch on very quickly to passing lambdas around. So that from there, we roll into ASP, MVC, learning object orientation. We go through the solid principles. We go through Entity Framework. I'm not exactly a huge fan of Entity Framework. Don't tell anyone I said that. But my philosophy on teaching is I teach what I see people hiring for. In the world of Microsoft, there's no question that more companies are using Entity Framework than any of the competing options. But I do also, once they get confident with Entity Framework, I roll them into straight ADO and doing their own SQL connections and commands and SQL data reader so that they are exposed to it. But we do most of our work in Entity Framework.
Sounds like you're giving them a lot of foreknowledge on how to be a better developer. I actually am a fan of Entity Framework, but I've also seen it misused or used without enough knowledge to know that maybe a query is bad and will get you into trouble. Maybe it isn't as performant as need be. Maybe you're bringing in the entire database for a single record.
Right.
So yeah, I think it's great to give the students the knowledge that they can use to figure out what's going on beneath the scenes.
Yep, that's my goal. And the ending of the program that we're in the phase right now is what I call data and advanced topics. And this is where I try to cover a survey of what you would get in a CS degree. There's no way anyone can give you in this period of time what you would get in a four-year degree. But I can introduce you to data structures and algorithms and algorithm analysis and give you pointers on where you should go next and what you should study deeply. Because my goal is to get them their first job. And you know, on your first job, having a passing familiarity with data structures and algorithms is probably all you really need to get started. But to progress to higher levels, then you need to go back and study it more deeply. And like I said, my philosophy is get them building stuff first so that, you know, by the time we talk about solid principles, by the time we talk about, you know, the OO pillars, by the time we talk about different patterns, they've been using them. They just didn't know what they were. And now they're ready when I explain it to go, oh, that's what you call this thing we've been using.
And you mentioned that there's a number of code schools out there, a number of boot camps. What got you into the mindset that your area needed another one? Is it just that you're trying to help grow the next run of developers in your area? What?
That's a big part of it. I did some analysis. I started looking around and I saw that there were a number of schools in the Atlanta area. I mean, literally in Atlanta. And they were primarily focused on languages like Ruby and Python, and some were doing Node. And there's nothing wrong with any of those languages, but all you've got to do is go to Career Builder or any of the other sites where you look for jobs and see what are the numbers of jobs available. It's interesting to me how regional it is, which languages are dominant in a given area. But for Atlanta, it's a fairly even split between .NET and Java. If you look at the numbers of jobs on average at any given moment, it's usually in the 150 range for Java and for .NET. Depends on which day you look, which of the two is higher than the other, but they're in the range of about 130 to 180 on any given day. Then you look at Ruby on Rails, and there will be a couple dozen jobs listed. You know, in Node, there's probably 15 to 20, or maybe up to 40 even, and a similar number for Python. No one was teaching .NET, and at the time, no one was teaching Java either. Now, I think one of those schools is teaching Java. The other thing is, if you look at the Atlanta area, traffic is a bear. And so the reason I created the user group out here was because it was difficult to get over to the meetups that were in Atlanta or in one of the other suburbs, which is west of here, Alpharetta. There's a lot of meetups over there. And so it was really difficult to travel around. And so I wanted a more hyper-local approach. And so I started the user group here close to home for the folks, because there are a lot of us who live in this county and commute into the city to work. I figured a similar approach to the school idea, because there were no code schools in Gwinnett County. There's a couple of good, there's a good community college and a good small college, but that's a different beast. One of the things that always surprises people when I do my recruiting meetings is I have one that I do very frequently called How to Start a Career as a Computer Programmer. And I go through the four main pathways that you can take: a four-year CS degree, a community college, boot camp, or self-study. And after going through the pros and cons, I always tell people, now, knowing that I run a coding boot camp, which one do you think I'm going to recommend as the number one choice? And they're like, you're going to recommend a boot camp. And I say, no, I'm going to recommend a four-year CS degree. I didn't start this school for people who have the time and money for a four-year CS degree. If you are fresh out of high school and your parents have a nice savings account for your college, go to college. That's not who I'm targeting. The folks who I'm mostly able to help are people who probably already have a degree in something. They're not paying off their student loans because whatever it was they studied isn't giving them enough money to do so. And they're generally closer to 30 than they are to 20. And that's kind of the average. I've got folks who are in their early 20s, and I've got folks who are a little bit older. The average tends to fall in around 30. That was kind of my impetus for starting the school here was, you know, if you look at the county I'm in, Gwinnett County has almost 900,000 people and no code school. And it's difficult to get from here into the city, especially if you're going to try to do it in the evenings during rush hour, especially if we keep burning down our interstates. Interstate 85 was set on fire and burned down, and the bridge fell down. The viaduct, it collapsed, and there's been this massive project to try to rebuild it. I think they're about to reopen within the next couple of weeks, which is amazing, because they didn't think they would get it done before the end of June. But they, as you can imagine, they have 250,000 cars go past that point every day. So they kind of had incentive to get that thing back up and functional.
Yeah, I'm hoping they can get that up and running pretty quickly. I've got to make a little road trip through the area at the end of the month. So it'd be really, really great if you guys could make that happen.
I'll get right on that. I'll go make sure they're ready for you.
All right. So I don't know if you've had a lot of opportunity to read through the Six Figure Developer blog site, but we, Clayton and I and some of our guest authors, enjoy writing about career development and clean code and professionalism. What more advice might you give to those just getting started or perhaps finding themselves in a bit of a lull in their career?
Absolutely get involved in the meetups. That's number one recommendation I would give to anybody, because just like going to the gym with a buddy who keeps you motivated, the meetups are a great way to get you excited and enthusiastic. You're learning new stuff from the speakers, and it's a chance to network, to build your career. But to me, it's also a great way to build your enthusiasm, because being around people who are excited about a topic helps you to get excited about that topic. Because I do career advice constantly with my students, and that's the number one thing I tell them is get out there and get to know people in the field. There's no substitute for that. The other things I tell people is to make sure that you do consider your career as your brand and that you manage it actively. No one else is going to manage your career. It's unpopular advice in some circles, but I tell people that when you're actively managing your career, if you've been in a company for 2 to 3 years, you need to reevaluate, do I stay in this current position, or would it be better for my trajectory of my career to look for a different position? And often it is better to look for something else, because at the moment that you're changing, you are in the position to negotiate a salary as opposed to asking for a raise. Raises, it's been my experience that often the person who's patient and loyal and stays in the one position gets a bit taken advantage of. There's also just the complacency danger. The one of the things that it's very dangerous to your career is to get super comfortable where you are. You're in a company and you're working with technology A, whatever technology A is, and you're really good at it. You've been doing it for years. It comes easy and you can show up at 9, you can leave at 5 and just let it all go. Well, the danger there is if technology A ceases to be a going concern. And we've seen that repeatedly over history of technology. This is the hotness. The hotness becomes cool and it becomes cold and no one wants it. And one of the things I tell people is if you're working on technology A for company A and you see that this technology is not going to get you your next job, but you see another technology that's up and coming, and your current company doesn't really want to train you on that. They don't want you to branch out to that because they need you to focus on technology A because they have a need to keep that running. Their needs and your needs have diverged at that point, and it is up to you to manage your career actively. And so what you need to be doing at this point is understand that eventually your company probably will go to technology B, the one you want to learn, but they're going to bring someone from the outside in who's been doing it already, and they can't move you because they need you to keep technology A working. So that's a terrible, terrible position to get into. So what you want to do, and the other thing I advise students, is start yourself a side business. I don't care if you charge money, don't charge money, have a side business going. Always have side projects. Because not only do they allow you to keep yourself current on the new technologies, because no one can tell you which technology to work on your own time, you can now learn it by having your own company where you do side projects, preferably for money. You now have a place on your resume to hang all those little technologies you want to show that you've been working on. And so now when it's a different company is investigating technology B, suddenly you're the person who's been working with it already. You've done these side projects with this new technology. And when they're looking, their folks who are still working on A, you're going to be the one to come in and be working on the hot new stuff and resented terribly by the folks who are loyal and stayed with them.
And I would like to add, don't get discouraged. Don't be afraid to have those conversations with your current employer, because as the technology grows and more companies become technology companies, they're recognizing the value of the employee that's willing to work for them and share their wants and needs and desires with them as they relate to technology, and saying, I really want to learn this. I want to use this tool to benefit myself and benefit the company. I think more and more companies are going to be open to having those discussions.
I certainly hope so. In the past, it's been my experience that you just actively need to manage it yourself to make sure they don't pigeonhole you. Because it's pretty easy for them to say, we need someone to keep working on this technology. Definitely have the conversation with them. I'm not saying you should jump after 2 to 3 years. I say you should reevaluate after 2 to 3 years. Make sure that it's still in your interest and their interest. And that would be a good time to have the conversation with them. Make sure that they know that you are actively managing your career and that you would be happy to work for them if your needs and their needs remain in sync.
So, Jeff, do you have any other upcoming engagements or any other items you might like to discuss?
Yep. The biggest things, I've got a couple of different classes that will be starting up here. In June, I'm doing an Intro to C# standalone course. This is not part of the boot camp. I have two main lines of business that I do class-wise. We have the six-month boot camp, which covers full-stack development, soup to nuts. But we also have what I call continuing education classes. These are 3 weeks long, totals out to 18 hours of instruction. The one we're doing in June, at the end of June, will be an introduction to C#. This is the beginnings of something I'm trying to do, which is for folks who are currently front-end web developers who want to become full-stack developers. They don't necessarily want to go to a whole boot camp and spend half the time studying stuff they already know. So I'm leading into having a part-time course that will be, you know, 3 months, that will be just a back-end course to bring someone who is a front-end developer up to speed on the back-end. But the first step towards that is for someone who piecemeal just wants to learn a specific topic. And so we're doing an intro to C-sharp then. Our next boot camp will start July the 10th, and this is going to be a part-time class where we meet two evenings a week and then on Saturdays for a half day. Beyond that, in October, and I'm blanking on the actual date in October, but in October, we start the next full-time course, which will be Monday through Friday, 9 till 5.
Any upcoming speaking engagements?
I have not been able to schedule any speaking engagements that far out just now because, like I said, I've been teaching 9 till 5 and then 6:30 till 10 most evenings, so I haven't had a chance. I'm hoping that as we grow and we bring in additional instructors, I'll be freed back up to do some more. But I definitely will be doing the Atlanta Code Camp in the fall. I'm not sure exactly yet. I don't think it's been scheduled, but that usually happens around October.
Well, maybe take a vacation and come on down to Florida.
Well, now that you mentioned, I will be there in the 1st of June. I don't know if you guys have a meetup free around that time, but it'll be as soon as we finish this course. We're going to be actually, my in-laws live in Hudson, which is just north of St. Pete. I will be down that area for probably a week, the first week of June, I think it is.
Well, we certainly love to have you. All right, Jeff, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
We've had Jeff Ammons, CEO and Chief Instructor at Code Career Academy. This has been the Six Figure Developer Podcast. I'm John Calloway.
And I'm Clayton Hunt.